One of the things that I want to impress upon our young people especially, but I want to impress upon all of us, is there is a declining effort to worship God. I was reading this past week an article which said that the Southern Baptist Convention was losing 9,000 persons per month. But that's just an indication of what's happening in general. I have told you before that in churches of Christ, regardless of their various convictions, it turns out that about 95% of our young people are falling away. There are those of you in this audience who have experienced that. And we need to strengthen our faith and theirs. And one of the things that happens, there's a journal that's put out for the general public called Scientific American. And it has articles on all kinds of science. And it also carries some what I would call opinion pieces in there. But one of them is written by this guy, Michael Shermer. He is a skeptic. He does not believe in God. And so as he reviewed a book and he's talking about his thinking on what religion does for people in general. Now I want you to apply this as we go over these things to you. Think about what religion does for you. And you're going to see in these things that there are some things that he puts, I believe, incorrectly, but nevertheless are troublesome to us and to our children. And there are other things that he thinks have no value, that science can fill at all, and we're going to examine that very carefully. And so he says, first of all, myth-making. And that is to explain apparently inexplicable phenomenon in the world. We're going to talk about that. The biggest one is, where did the world come from? How was it created? How did life come to be? And so that's the kind of thing that he says, that's what these myths are good for. And then he correctly understands that in religion, we are looking for redemption. Now, this is not true of all religions in this world, but we are looking for forgiveness in this life and resurrection, that is, immortality in the next. That's true only as we look at this country and part of Western Europe and the other parts of the world don't have these same ideas about it. But then he says morality. And what he's saying is that the church is there to help reinforce the behavior of our young people and our old people to do good and to punish. That is, that there will be a punishment beyond what the government gives you for not being good. Morality. And then sociality, the encouragement of within-group enmity, that is, kindness and love. You might think about, we want our group to be cohesive, we want us all to be together. I talk about that a lot, wanting everybody to assemble at every service. And there are people who look at me and say, it's too much. And then there's also, they say, well, they want to have between-group enmity, that is, they want others to hate. They want this group to hate the other group. That's what I call tribalism. That's what afflicts most of the world, is tribalism. My tribe versus your tribe. We have it here in the United States. My group versus your group. But we're going to look at what religion, true religion, should do for us. So, as I said, first on his list would be the origin of life in the universe. The very first thing I want you to think about is the Norse, Greek, Roman, Indian, or American Indian myths that were and are just that, myths. That's what I'm talking about there. Uninspired, men made up explanations of things they don't understand. If you travel around the world, you'll see various explanations given for these things. But, you know, I always had the wrong picture of Atlas standing there with the globe. It's not the globe, it's the celestial spheres that are on his back. They didn't think the world was round back then necessarily. They didn't know. That globe, you see, were the celestial spheres. And what they thought was everything circled around up there on an orbit, and they were spheres. And so they looked at the moon and the sun and the stars, and they thought they were all just going up there. They didn't know what was happening. But he was had to hold these up as a punishment in a war among the gods. Now, those are Roman and Greek myths. And you start thinking about this and you say, wait a minute. That doesn't explain anything. That he has to hold up the celestial spheres, and then all of a sudden we move a little bit forward in knowledge and we find out, oh, there's nothing holding them up there. And the interesting thing is, in Job's 26th chapter and verse 7, you know, it's just, you might think of it, well, this is just poetry. He says, he stretches out over the north an empty space and hangs the earth on nothing. And you sit there and you think, wait a minute. How did Job know? This is probably the oldest book in the Bible. Probably 5,000 years old. And he hangs the earth on nothing. You say, well, wait a minute. When did we understand the gravitational theory? Wasn't that something that the Englishman thought about? And you start looking at this and you say, how is it that Job just happened to put this in the book? And you say, these things are put in there not as an accident, but they're just in there as a matter of fact. We don't find any absurdities in the Bible like you find when you're talking about Atlas or Prometheus or Hercules. There's some Indian blood associated with my family. Hiawatha of the Iroquois, back in the 16th century, said that plants had spirits and were beautiful women clothed in vines. That guy had a problem distinguishing between a tree and a girl. He spoke of a religion that was equivalent to the idol worshippers that Isaiah wrote about. If you look at Isaiah chapter 44, verse 14, surely he cuts cedars for himself and takes a cypress or an oak and raises it for himself among the trees of the forest. He plants a fir, and the rain makes it grow. Then it becomes something for a man to burn. So he takes one of them and warms himself. He also makes a fire to bake bread. He also makes a god and worships it. He makes it a graven image and falls down before it. You realize that that happens all the time. Seen anything lately with the Pope running around? There's all kinds of idols hanging around that they'll bow down before, including the Pope. But we've got more to say about that later. Let me just point out something to you. Neither Sherman nor any other scientist can tell you why the world came into existence. They'll say, oh, there was a Big Bang. And you look at it and say, yes, but what started it? And they look at you and say, well, we can't tell much about what the origin was, but we know what happens nanoseconds later. Okay, that still doesn't explain anything. You know, I'm an old man now, but when I was young and in college, they were still teaching this oscillating universe. That is, the universe would expand until something happened, and then it would contract. And then start all over again. In other words, the universe is eternal. Although there are going to be a bunch of stars that are going to burn out in a few billion years as they look at it. But they can't tell you why it started. They all agree now that it's the Big Bang. You know, there was this other idea of steady state. Nothing ever changed. Everything that we've done since about 1950 in physics has shown that that was just foolishness. Made up by men. Foolishness. Dawkins says, a fortuitous circumstance that life occurred. You know, I was talking with some folks the other day about this. And if you think about an enzyme, that's one of these things that's the catalyst. You can think of it sort of like your catalytic converter. It changes one thing to another. And God made all these really neat things, and it would change one thing to another. And you sit there and you say, well, what are the chances of that coming about by accident? And Francis Crick, who's the co-discoverer of the structure of the DNA, said, well, there was an ancient astronaut, and he spread bacteria all throughout the universe, and that's how life started. But he said also, his mathematician said, that the chances of life happening by accident were the same as someone flying as a tornado going through the town of Wichita Falls, Texas, and hitting the dump and constructing a Boeing 747 from what was there. I like that one. I use that a lot. Why did he say that? Because the probability is about the same. Now, if you're here as a random accident, you don't have a purpose. If you are going to be convinced by some professor who's going to be a smart guy, he's going to be able to remember a lot of stuff. But the question is, if you're here as a random accident, why are you here? And what good are you and what are you doing? And by the way, what is good? If someone tries to give you a purpose to say you're going to propagate the species, now they're saying, hey, there's too many of us. You know, this world was such a nice place before everybody had children when I was a kid. There were just spaces everywhere. We didn't need all these houses around here, and we didn't need all these roads. And, you know, one of the fellows that was here when I first came here, John Whaley, told me, he said, do you realize that US 1 was the only road between Washington and Baltimore? When he moved to his house in Hanover. And he said, it was so busy you couldn't hardly get on it. I hope you realize there are about 36 lanes of traffic now between Baltimore and Washington. And those of you who don't live around here, go out there some morning at 8 o'clock and see what it's like. You're going to say, this is unbelievable. These people driving this stuff. Okay. As you think about the number of species, have you seen something lately that said, this just went extinct? We're just having all kinds of things go extinct. And have you ever thought about, so what? Do you really think that it matters? They're all going extinct. And everybody's worried about it. I will tell you that there was a fellow who was at one time the president of the Texas Academy of Sciences, and he thought that we ought to take the middle two-thirds of this country and turn it into a big park for buffalo and things like that and not let people in it. He cares more about the animals than he does about the people. You know, the only problem that we have is too many of us are living so long. And too many of us are surviving childhood. If you start looking at, say, well, wait, we've got too many humans on the planet. We need to keep these other things too. Now, I don't disagree with that. I think it would be nice to have them. But let me tell you, many species have already disappeared. Can you tell the difference between what the world would be like if they were still here and now that it's gone? And you sit there and say, well, I've never experienced such a thing. So we don't know. I want to impress upon you that although science is trying to explain what God has done, and sometimes they don't realize it, I want to tell you that as you look at these things, they don't know what's going to happen. A friend of mine had a friend who was deeply involved in aerospace and many years ago, and he said, you know, the ozone hole is expanding. And you say, yes. And Lou said, what does that mean? And the guy said, it means they can measure it now, and they couldn't measure it before, so now they know it's getting bigger. What does that mean? We don't know. In fact, I check the weather on a regular basis before I go on my bike ride. And those guys can't even tell me whether it's going to rain on me an hour from the time I take off. And sometimes I get up in the morning and I plan my day around. I'm going to ride at this time of day. And I check the weather. You know, those little phones are marvelous things. They'll tell you about the weather. You know, you get just as much information, nearly, if you just look out the window. Because they don't know what's going to go on next week. But let me tell you, we do have a purpose given by God. And the end result is redemption. In Ecclesiastes chapter 12, beginning at verse 11, Solomon says, "The words of wise men are like goads, and masters of these collections are like well-driven nails. They are given by one shepherd." I want you to think about that. By the way, those of you who are going to college right now, don't buy your books. Rent them if you can. I bought my books. I kept them. And you know, when I got rid of them, they were so bad that it was just incredible. Everything had changed. Now, the other thing that's changed is the price. I bought all the books I needed for a semester of college for about $25. And now you can do the same thing for somewhere between $250 and $500. But yours will have pictures in it. Color pictures. Mine didn't have any color pictures. "Beyond this, my son, be warned, the writing of many books is endless, and excessive devotion to books is wearying to the body. You can't learn it all." It doesn't matter. I've tried. I study and I read and I can't even keep up with... Well, have you even tried to keep up with the news lately? I only take two papers, the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post. I went away to Costa Rica for a week and I came back and there's papers that deep sitting in my front room. And I think, I need to read those. Do you think I need to read those? I mean, all these things that happened while I was gone. And, well, let me tell you, I'll struggle through. The conclusion when all has been heard is fear God and keep His commandments. Because this applies to every person. "For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil." There's a purpose to serve God. Without God, there is no purpose, nor reason for progress, kindness or love. Think about those things. If you're thinking about science, thinking about kindness and love, how do you measure such things in a scientific manner? Some young man will go out with some young lady, and although they may not realize it, there are hormones that they can smell that draw them to each other. And that's not all there is to love, is there? I have been told by my grandson's roommate that there are not many girls where he's going to school who meet his criteria. And I thought that was pretty interesting that he has criteria. And all young people do. They have a criteria. This is what I want in a mate. And aren't we fortunate that it's different for everyone? Because we're all made differently. But when you start thinking about good or evil, you notice you've probably already read down. You're getting ahead of me there. Brigham Young did indeed have 55 wives at one time. And I looked it up to make certain. But you know what's going on now, just this last week? You know, the Catholic Church requires celibacy. Have you ever thought where they got that from? Not from the Bible, I will assure you. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 2, which is not up there, says, "But because of immoralities, let every man have his own wife and every woman her own husband." Okay? But they have celibacy. And they're hiding sex abuse by literally thousands of priests. And this guy, Archbishop Vigano, this comes out of last week's Washington Post, and you can read about it in all the other papers too. He has had an interview in which he says, "The Pope is blatantly lying." If there are any Catholics here, I trust that you will recognize these are the words of one of the princes of the church. That's what they call archbishops. One of the princes of the church. And he says the leader is blatantly lying. Sounds to me like American politics. What's he lying about? He says he's known and he's covered up what these other guys have done. And he won't turn it over to the police even now. You know what? I turned a page in the paper and there was an op-ed. And that's where I found out that 9,000 Southern Baptists were leaving every month. And it turns out that they say the reason is that there are 700 Baptist pastors whose sexual transgressions have been covered up by the Southern Baptist Convention. And the Southern Baptist Convention says, wait a minute, these churches are autonomous. We don't do anything. They ordain ministers in their seminaries. If you haven't been in a seminary, you can't be a Baptist preacher. One of my classmates on one of these reunions I went to a few years ago said, I was the first woman Baptist pastor ever ordained in the Southern Baptist Convention. Okay. There's some other folks that have some problems. Then you start thinking about Islam right now. Muhammad said Allah required that the unbelievers be fought till death unless they pay the tax. Have you ever thought about, is that right or wrong? You know, Shermer doesn't make any difference between religions. He thinks they're all the same. I think the man's an idiot. But an uninformed person is really what you would say. He just doesn't know. The Quran states not to make friendship with Jews and Christians. Surah 551. Kill the disbelievers when we find them. Surah 2, 191. Murder them and treat them harshly. Surah 9, 122. By the way, surah is what they call a chapter. Fight and slay the pagans, seize them, beleaguer them, and lie in wait for them in every stratagem. You want to know what Islam wants to do with the United States and Christians in general and anybody else that's not a Muslim? You've just read it with me. You think they're going to change? And the answer is no. They may come here. By the way, they even have the right to lie if it'll get them what they want. They'd like to come here. This is a nice place to live. You know, I was just down on some roads in Costa Rica that were frightening. People wondering, what are you doing? In fact, I was driving a sort of a sports car. My wife was sitting in the other seat. We were going down a road in Costa Rica, and she said, I thought I was going to die. Have you ever thought about, was it wrong for Hitler to try to establish the master race? I suspect that every one of you immediately says, well, of course it's wrong. But how is Shermer going to establish that? You know, the Germans passed a law to make everything they did legal. They did absolutely nothing that was not according to the law. You might say, a lot of people do, well, why are we going over there to wipe them out for what they did? After all, don't get me started, 6 million Jews. You know, you start thinking about what the Germans passed laws to do, and you said, Hitler turned a country that once recognized God into a people who were evil throughout. They knew what was going on and they allowed it to happen. This is the dumbest one I've seen lately. That the Prime Minister, the current Prime Minister of India, said, we worship Lord Ganesha. That's the statue right there. That's not a kid's toy. That's something that he said. Literally, this is a direct quote. There must have been some plastic surgeon at that time who got an elephant's head on the body of a human being and began the practice of plastic surgery. You can search that on the internet. It's there. He literally said that. The Prime Minister of India. Do you think that Shermer thinks that religion is stupid? He's familiar with this one. He would pull it up and say, look at what people who believe in religion do. We need to make a difference between the religions of the world and the Bible. Jesus counsels peace with all men. Romans chapter 12, verse 18, if possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. Shermer and other skeptics like him either isn't aware, and that's a big possibility. I've met a lot of very intelligent people who read through the Bible once and said, well, I saw a lot of contradictions. But when they're really pushed, they say, oh, well, maybe I just didn't understand that. So either he's not aware or just doesn't want to admit. One of those people who looks at a Bible verse. And this is what makes me so upset about the denominational world, the Baptists. They'll come to Acts chapter 2 and verse 38. And it's never the good news on WRBS. They're not going to put that passage out there. They don't believe it. And you can go to 1 Peter 3 and verse 21. It says, the life of your warranty, even baptism, doth also now save us. I had one argue with me for nearly 8 years on a radio program. Every week he'd call up and he said, that verse does not say that baptism saves us. And I'd say, well, let me read it to you this way. Many of you have heard this before, but there's always some new folks. I said, does it say the like figure whereunto even baptism doth also now not save us? And he would yell, no! And I said, so it does save us? And he would yell, no! And I said, Stanley, you can't have it both ways. And he finally asked me one time, he said, why do you always try to make me look like an idiot? I resisted. I didn't say because it was so easy. But I resisted. When people look at a Bible verse and say, well, I don't believe that one. No, we don't do that. Then you need to think about why not. Last week in Costa Rica, one of the things that I failed to say in a lesson, you know, if the Bible's wrong somewhere, you know what that means? It means we can't trust it. It means that it's not worth the paper it's written on. It has to be true or it's not. And there's no in between, brethren. We need to get that in our minds. We may misunderstand it terribly, but I will tell you the Bible is true. When people don't have the Bible, they don't have God to make up the rules, they make up their own rules for right and wrong. I saw a headline, Howard County churches are welcoming the LGBTQ, whatever it is. And they had the rainbow up there, and they had this lady dressed in this nice white, she's copying the Pope, nice white robe, you know, that she's leading over, and she's welcoming the children into her church. You realize she just made up some stuff, and she doesn't believe the Bible. And you need to realize that Shermer looks at someone like her, and he has to say, these people are just making this stuff up. Do you wonder why somebody who believes in reason will look at people and say, they're making this up? And I'm telling you, it's because they don't read and study the Bible to try to understand what God has said. If you'll do that, you can work it out. There are no mistakes in the Bible. Shermer says the main purpose of religion is this sociality. He believes that religion is the cause of hatred, my group versus your group. And he fails to distinguish between Christianity and the religions of the world. Roman Catholicism, Islam, Hinduism. Have you ever investigated the history of Catholicism and Protestantism over the earthly rule that they thought this earth needed? I'm always amazed that people don't know about 70,000 Huguenots killed on one Sunday afternoon in France. Because they were not Catholics, the good citizens of France, now they make nice food, and they especially make nice pastries, but let me just tell you something. They're as bigoted as you'll ever get to be, for the most part. They don't want to hear about this. In fact, they've had so many wars over there that they've given up on God. The fact that Notre Dame Cathedral burned down only irritated them because it was such a pretty building and so old and so nice. And it brought so many tourists. 13 million tourists a year went to see the place. I went there a bunch of times. I thought it was absolutely astounding. The architecture was amazing. And those same nice French people their ancestors, killed 70,000 believers in God in one afternoon because they said, "You won't accept allegiance to the Pope of Rome." So, as you think about this, if you look at the history of those who say they follow the Bible and don't, it places Shermer and people like him, scientists who are ignorant of what's going on, at a serious disadvantage. And I don't find it amazing that just looking at religion in general, that somebody's going to look at it and say, "This is a mess." Brethren, when Jesus said to go into all the world and preach the gospel, He was talking to us. We're the only hope this world has. If we don't do it, who's going to? And you can look around your house, you can look around at your neighbor's houses, and you can think there are some nice folks there. But if you don't tell them about Jesus Christ, they're going to be lost. And this world is going to continue on the downhill road that America's on right now. You know, John the 18th chapter and verse 36, Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then my servants would be fighting that I might not be delivered up to the Jews." Do you wonder what all those wars the Catholics and the Protestants were fighting were for? They said it was for His kingdom, but they lied. They didn't bother to read the book. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 12, "Our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places." There are philosophies that are out there that are going to bring down this country. Probably not in my lifetime because I'm an old man. But I worry about my children and grandchildren and what will happen during their lifetimes. It's difficult for the uninformed to see that all religion is not established to between-group enmity. Christianity does not seek to establish sociality consisting only of encouragement of within-group enmity, with love and kindness towards one another. Matthew, the 28th chapter, Jesus told us to make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And then He said, "Teach them to observe all that I have commanded you." In Galatians chapter 3 and verse 28, it says, "There's neither Jew nor Greek. There's neither slave nor free man. There's neither male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus." We need to remember that, brethren. We're all one. We need to be together, lifting each other up. 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 18, "Now all these things are from God who reconciled us to Himself through Christ and who gave us the ministry of reconciliation. Namely, that God was in Christ reconciling the world to Himself, not counting their trespasses against them. And He has committed to us the word of reconciliation." You've got it, brethren. You've got to do something about it. "Therefore, knowing the fear of the Lord, we persuade men." From 2 Corinthians 5 at verse 11 and then at verse 20. "Therefore, we are ambassadors for Christ. As though God were entreating through us, we beg you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God." Something that we need to remember every day of our lives. And so as you think about this, and hopefully this lesson has given you something to think about, as you go out into the world this week, where do you stand? You know, if you stand with God and the truth that is revealed in the Bible, you stand for morality, civility, kindness, truthfulness. And if you don't, what you're standing for really is anarchy. Let every person do what's right in their own eyes. Why, those people are such nice people. They will lead your children astray. What are you doing? Where are you going to stand? If you're here this morning and you haven't been obedient to the gospel, remember what Ananias said to the Apostle Paul, at that time Saul. What are you waiting for? Get up and be baptized and wash away your sins. If there's any way in which we can help you, won't you let us know? While together we stand and we sing.